This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. And by AircraftLauncher.com, the UAV launcher that made Ag Eagle famous. AircraftLauncher.com helps fixed-wing drone suppliers and manufacturers launch their fixed-wing drones safely and efficiently with a self-contained bungee power catapult launcher. Learn more at AircraftLauncher.com. You're listening to episode 219 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, we looks like we got a good show tonight, huh?
Yeah, lots going on. Lots of webinars. We mentioned that last week, and we've got a couple more under our belt, plus some other interesting developments.
Developments? We have developments on this show?
Yes, we do.
Well, I guess we should get started. What do you think? Well, our first story comes from Bloomberg News, and I guess we talked about this and we were sort of perplexed about what was going on. But it's Congress poised to restore drone registration tossed out by court. We have drone registration round two, right? What would you say? Would you agree with that?
You know, yes, we do, or at least it's looking like that's the way it's going to go. Now, this is because H.R. 2810, that's the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2018, contains a measure that would give the FAA authority to bring back drone registration. Here's the legislative language. This is from the National Defense Authorization Act conference report. Section D, restoration of rules for registration and marketing of unmanned aircraft. And it says, the rules adopted by the administrator of the Federal Aviation Administration in the matter of registration and marking requirements for small unmanned aircraft that were vacated by the United States Court of Appeals for the District Columbia Circuit in Taylor versus Huerta shall be restored to effect on the date of enactment of this act. And David, just wanted to thank really quickly Tom McMahon from AUVSI. He's the VP of Advocacy and Public Affairs. We were having a little difficulty locating the actual text, and he helped us out with that. So a big thanks to him. But what you have here is two bills, one in the House, one in the Senate, Defense Appropriation Acts, and as is usually the case, they were a little bit different, so they went to committee to be resolved, for all the discrepancies between the two to be resolved, and this is what we have now. It looks like the FAA, if this is enacted into law, is going to be able to reinstate drone registration.
Which I'm not really upset about. I don't know about you. It's interesting that it's tied to something that no one's going to argue with, which is the Defense Appropriation Act. Our military needs money, especially our soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines, to get paid. So the fact that it's sneaking back in there is interesting. And I'm not really upset about that. Normally, I'm usually cranky when it comes to things being inserted into other things. But in this case, I thought drone registration was a good thing, and I was sort of surprised it was struck down when it was, and not using really good logic to strike it down. I don't know. What's your opinion?
Well, I think the logic was that the current FAA authorization bill from 2012 specifically states that the FAA can't, mess with model aircraft. And the judge in this case saw that that's exactly what the drone registration effort was doing. And so he said, the law is you can't do that. So the corrective action we see here is Congress, who defines the law that the FAA is going to operate under, includes this that says it FAA can turn back on what they had to turn off because of the court decision. So they've given the FAA the legal basis to go ahead with it. So the House has approved this, the committee report. This is for the whole defense authorization bill. The House approved it on November 14th, and the Senate is expected to vote on it shortly. And most people, I believe, think that this is going to pass. If it does, then it's signed by the president and it becomes law. The AUVSI, the Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International, as well as the AMA, the Academy of Model Aeronautics, are in favor of having a drone registration program. And so they have this to look forward to. You know, there's some questions people are asking, like, what happens if you registered your drone previously and then took advantage of the FAA's offer to get your $5 back? What happens to you? And the AMA has a little bit of Q&A, and they try to answer some questions like that. They feel that most likely if you asked to be removed and got your $5 back, that you'll probably have to re-register again. We'll have to wait and see.
And they did provide an interesting stat of 838,600 people as owners of at least one drone registered as of November 3rd. Only 609 people had requested the refund of the $5 fee. The two hosts of this show didn't request their $5 fee back. I personally thought it was money well spent, but clearly I don't know if that was a communication failure or most people thought it was reasonable to register your drones. I hope it's the latter, not the former.
Now, it's interesting if you look at this bill. The section that includes reinstating the drone registration is section 1092, which is termed Collaboration Between Federal Aviation Administration and Department of Defense on Unmanned Aircraft Systems. And there are four sections. The first three are interesting. Collaboration says the administrator of the FAA and the Secretary of Defense may collaborate on sense and avoid capabilities for unmanned aircraft systems. It says the collaboration may include things like sharing information on safely integrating unmanned aircraft systems and manned aircraft in the national airspace system, the development of civil standards, policies, procedures, things like informing stakeholders. There's also a section, participation by FAA in DOD activities. And it says, in general, the FAA may participate and provide assistance to the Secretary of Defense for activities during the test and evaluation efforts of the Department of Defense, including the Air Force, relating to airborne and ground-based sense and avoid capabilities for unmanned aircraft systems. Also in that section is participation through test sites. These may include provision of assistance through Department of Defense unmanned aircraft system test sites or a Federal Aviation Administration test range. So I think that's it's kind of interesting how the defense bill is looking at allowing the FAA and the Department of Defense to collaborate in these ways.
And that's not a bad thing. We know that the FAA doesn't really have any enforcement power. And we know the Department of Defense has struggled with civilian UAVs and the violations of airspace, etc. You know, and we've gone through the whole, if you fly over airspace, don't be surprised if they shoot it down. But if you look at it this way, having the two work together and having the Department of Defense authorized to interact with the civilian agency, that's a really good thing because it makes regulations more concrete and substantial.
Yeah, it makes sense. I don't know if there's precedent for this or if this is something new, but in any event, yeah, David, I think I agree that it sounds pretty good.
The Department of Defense participates in the NAS, or otherwise known as the National Airspace. So why wouldn't they want to interact with the FAA? And the FAA and the Department of Defense have always had an interactive and a working relationship. So this is just drawing in the UAV aspect of it over whereas the normal UAS interaction or the normal NAS interaction. So I'm going to say something and maybe people are going to freak out, but good for Congress for doing it this way.
It's bipartisan support, which is something that you don't see too often. So that's great.
Well, no one's going to argue with funding the Department of Defense.
Well, that's the thing.
I think that's a statement. You know, nobody wants to have their name attached to the fact that they turned down money for our soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines. But even so, I think it's appropriate that this integration is included in this because it's really all one game, various players, but one game. So yeah. I'm okay with this.
Now, we'll have lots of links in the show notes if you're interested in digging deeper into this, including a link from govtrack.us where you can track the progress of the bill. So if you want to see when the Senate has voted to approve it, when the president has signed it, all of that, there's a timeline there and you can track it through that link. But well, we have some other things as well if you want to dig in deep.
All right.
On to Airbus.
They had a very large sale in Dubai over the last couple of days, but this is not about that. This is about Vahana, the electric flying car, and this is from TheVerge.com. Airbus will test its Vahana electric flying car by the end of 2017. Not much left of 2017 to be doing testing, Max.
They're moving right along. Now, this is an electric single-seat tilt-rotor vertical takeoff and land aircraft. Airbus is building two of them right now. And yeah, their goal is to have a first flight by the end of 2017. They have a new test center they've set up in Pendleton, Oregon. And that's where I guess they plan to do this. This work is being done through a subsidiary, the A-cubed subsidiary of Airbus.
You know, Max, when we started this show, I didn't know that I would be an expert on drone legalese, nor would I have expected to be an expert on flying taxis.
Yeah, autonomous.
Flying taxis.
Flying taxis, yeah.
I don't know. I just can't understand how we've got to autonomous flying taxis. But there's a concept video, which we'll have links to the show notes, which will be theuavdigest.com/219. And interesting that they want production by 2020. That's awfully quick, especially if the first flight is before the end of this year.
Yes, it does seem like a pretty aggressive timetable, you know, especially in light of what we see typically for the entry of new aircraft designs. So, yeah, Airbus is moving along. I think that building the hardware and developing the software, in some ways that might even be the easiest part of all this, getting it certified and getting public acceptance. I think that may be the hard part of this.
I agree. Now, I have to be honest, I have to be skeptical of this because for the last couple of weeks, I've used the word vaporware quite often. But in this case, Airbus has got the money and the capital to be able to push something through, whether it happens or not. A lot of the things that we've talked about on Airplane Geeks recently, the capital isn't there. So I don't know. I mean, if anybody from Airbus is listening to the show, if they do need a human cargo to take place on said vehicle.
Oh, no.
I'm going to extend my volunteership as usual to any sort of unmanned aerial that needs human baggage. But that being said, I'm going to still remain skeptical because I need to be consistent across all lines of podcasts where things that are newfangled sometimes don't ever come to pass. But we'll see. But speaking of authorizations, and this week's news from the FAA, we have AIN online. FAA rolls out automated authorizations for drone flights.
Part 107 operators commercial drone operators, you can now obtain automated authorization to fly in controlled airspace near four airports. And of course, this is part of the LANCE program, the FAA's low altitude authorization and notification capability. And this is rolling out at four airports.
Medium-sized to small airports, let's just say that. Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky, or KCVG, Lincoln Airport, KLNK in Nebraska, Reno Tahoe International Airport at KRNO in Nevada, and San Francisco's San Jose International Airport, KSJC. I wonder what Mr. Trescott thinks about this. We might have to get him on the show about this, huh? Because that's his home airport.
Now, the FAA expects to add more airports, as many as 49 in 2018. And, of course, the idea here, or the goal, the ultimate goal here, is to get fast online response to requests for authorization to fly. Some people point out that this may actually result in safer flights because the current system takes so much time. Probably not everybody is getting the authorizations they need. If you can just do it through your smartphone and get fast results, then people will be more inclined, I think, to take advantage of following these requirements. So there's two right now. There's two companies signed up to provide this service, AirMap and Skyward. Both of them will be allowing you to get your authorization through an app or through your smartphone. So very handy.
So shout out to Mr. Trescott when you fly your drone at your local airport. Let's see what happens when you use the technology. And using cell phone technology brings us to our next story. AT&T deploys first cell site on wings, otherwise known as a cow.
So they're doing this in Puerto Rico, where connectivity is still not available in many areas as a result of Hurricane Maria. And they say this is the first time an LTE cell site on a drone has been deployed successfully to connect residents after a disaster. So this is actually a very small device. Really, I say small relative to the size of a cell tower and what you see hanging up there, but it's a helicopter drone. It is tethered, and it provides cell coverage for a local area, something that can be deployed quickly.
And cell phone coverage is line of sight.
Right.
Believe it or not, the cell phone towers that you use are, your phone has to be in line of sight of them to use them. So, and of course, tethering is multiple purposes. It provides power. It provides the network capability. And it also prevents things from escaping. Well, unless you're the Army and you have a tethered blimp that occasionally breaks free. But this is a really good use. We've talked about persistent satellites. In Puerto Rico right now, it's definitely a first test case scenario because of the Hurricane Maria. So good for AT&T. I'm sure Verizon isn't far behind. And positive news. We've talked about tethered satellites now for a while, or low-level satellites, and finally we're starting to get them. So I'm curious what the turnaround is after it's been up for a while. How long does it, do they have another one prepped and ready to go? Because you want persistent connectivity. So I'm curious about that. And again, another video of the week will be at our website, which is the UAVDigest.com/219.
Right. This is an AT&T video, AT&T's first official deployment of cell on wings in Puerto Rico.
Well, the next story is about connectivity. Well, or webinars.
Webinars. Several webinars. Yes, we mentioned the AOPA webinar last episode. This was the first AOPA Drone Talk webinar. And we saw AOPA Director of Regulatory Affairs, Justin Barkowski, also Senior Director of UAS Programs, Kat Swain, and Legal Services Plan attorneys Jared Allen and Chad Mayer. And they offered their advice for navigating through current federal regulations as well as through the sort of myriad of state and local rules and regulations that drone pilots should be aware of. But this was from November 10th. The webinar is available online, actually on YouTube, and we'll put that in the show notes. I saw the number of participants peak at around about 185 as I was participating in the webinar. And they talked about some different topics, insurance for one, airspace authorizations and waivers when you need them. They talked about Lance and also this patchwork of laws, privacy, local use of UAS, a number of other topics. They also talked about FAA investigations. Someone from the audience asked about how you notify the FAA when you see somebody behaving badly with their drone. And they explained that typically the FAA learns about problems that they need to investigate from social media and from local law enforcement. So they recommended that if you see something, one way to start this process of an investigation by the feds is to contact local law enforcement. But I also would add that I'm not sure that local law enforcement in all cases is really going to know what to do with the complaint.
Agreed, but it's a start. We're back to educating, you know, and we have to educate law enforcement as well as the pilots and operators. And it was nice that we got a notification from CAT that AOPA acknowledged our communication. So we hope to continue that relationship because both Max and I really appreciate AOPA from both aspects of our podcast. And it's a good way to interact between the drone operators and the pilots. And the pilots are going to become drone operators and the drone operators are going to become pilots. So it's a real interesting website you should go to. It's AOPA.org/drones. Definitely, if you go there, we'd love to hear your feedback. And we'd love to be able to pass it on to CAT and the gang in Maryland so we can keep the conversation open.
Also, we had another webinar, and this was just today from Hogan Lovells. This was UAS Regulatory and Policy Developments. Lisa Ellman, a partner at Hogan Lovells, was there, as well as Matt Clark, Hogan Lovells Senior Associate. But also participating was Emily Avant, and she's the Senior Counsel for CNN. And they talked about the CNN waiver for flights over people, which was really, really fascinating. They'd actually had a couple of other waivers prior to this one where they used a different drone than this current waiver. And they had some difficulty in that under the conditions of the waiver, it didn't give them the flexibility that they needed to actually use the thing for the kinds of news gathering activities that that they were trying to cover with these drones. But they knew that. That wasn't a surprise, I think. And it was sort of part of this process of getting to where they wanted to be. She talked about the current waiver, which took about a year of working with the FAA to develop. They talked about the reasonableness approach. This was a very interesting kind of aspect to it, which is that the FAA is obviously interested in safety, and they're concerned with, okay, if you fly a drone over people, what happens if something goes wrong and the drone ends up falling on people? Originally, the assessment was all based on kinetic energy, right? How much does the drone weigh? How far does it fall? What's the energy associated with it? And what does that do when it hits your head? But that didn't take into account other factors like the type of drone. For example, in this current authorization, they're using the drone that's actually held together by magnets. So when it hits something, it all comes apart, absorbing the energy. So just using a strict kinetic energy model is not accurate. But also part of this reasonableness approach that they've taken includes other factors like operational mitigations and things like that. Looking at the total situation, all of the circumstances surrounding the flight. So they talked a lot about that. They talked about how to make the safety case for your waiver. They had some tips for applicants. They talked about this concept of operations document, a detailed description, also the operational risk assessment. So anyone who's either interested in how do you go about getting a waiver of this type, or how did CNN and Hogan Lovells go about doing this, this is really, I think, instructive. There's a lot of good advice in that section of this webinar, which was a 90-minute webinar, David. It's a pretty long webinar.
Good takeaways. Maybe we need to get somebody from Hogan Lovells on again. Lisa's always been good to us, but I'd love to learn a little bit more of the details on this and how other people can leverage what the FAA gave to CNN for overflights. You know, so it's, we've come a long way, you know, Max. It's getting close to, we're only like 4 weeks away from when we have to do that summary episode of what we thought was going to happen versus what happened. And this is one of those, wow, very cool. We'll see how quickly the authorization spread, though, you know, from CNN to other agencies and local news agencies. I know here in Philadelphia, we have Drone 6, which is WPVI's or our ABC affiliate's drone that they use, but they're not allowed to fly over people yet. But I can see this happening very quickly.
One of the features of this authorization that CNN has just gotten is that while it is specific to the kind of drone to be used, unlike the other waivers, it's not specific in terms of the classes of people that they can fly over. They pretty much have the open ability to cover newsworthy events with this, not just because they've asked for that, but because, not just because that's what they want to do, but because they've developed, you know, a comprehensive plan that looks at all the risks. What happens if the battery runs out? What happens if there's an intrusion into the airspace by some other aircraft? And they've addressed each and every one of these issues, and the FAA has become satisfied that this represents a safe situation, or at least sufficiently safe in that the risks are identified and mitigated. So, yeah, I think it is a learning curve for not only the FAA, but also the industry. I think CNN is paving the way for other organizations that similarly want to be able to fly over groups of people. They've gone through a lot of the pain to figure out how to make this work with the FAA. So I think a lot of other organizations really are going to end up owing a lot of gratitude to CNN.
As well as Hogan Lovells. They took the time to see that it's just beyond just flying the aircraft over people. There's prep involved and thinking things through, and that's a good thing. It's a really good thing to know that there are people out there who are doing the right things and not just flying randomly. We still are charged with people flying into airplanes, but this is well thought out, prepped journalism would be the best term for it. It's a camera for a journalist, but they're thinking about how it affects the environment. So that's really good. Congratulations to both CNN and Hogan Lovells.
Absolutely. They also talked about the UAS Integration Pilot Program. And I thought I heard Lisa mention some numbers about how many people have indicated an interest in this. And it is a lot, like hundreds and hundreds, where the FAA is looking for an initial five. So it'd be interesting to see how that's handled. But just quickly, the timeline is really tight. The due dates are coming up very fast. The deadline for lead applicants to submit a notice of intent is November 28th. Also, the deadline for interested parties, and here again, there's hundreds of them, interested parties to request inclusion is December 13th, and there are other due dates along the way. But again, if you're interested in participating in this, you have to act really, really, really quickly. So the presentation at this moment is not up on the website. We do have a copy of it. We'll make it available either directly to our copy or through a link to Hogan Lovell's at some point, if not immediately when the show notes are published, at least they'll be updated to reflect that as quickly as we can. So it's a great presentation to go through and highly recommend.
So I guess with that, Max, I guess we should say wrap this up. We've got a bunch of videos and webinars and FAA news. Seems to be getting to be routine for us, huh? We should get some guests on before the end of the year. I need to work better at that. So where can they find us online, Max?
Well, of course, you can find us at the UAVDigest.com. That's full of show notes for each of our episodes, particularly if you're listening to this at some point in the future and want to go straight to this episode's show notes. They're at the UAVDigest.com/219.
And of course, you can find us on lots of social media. You can find us on Twitter at UAV Digest. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/UAV Digest. You can find us on Google Play, Stitcher, and iTunes. And the best way to help us there would be leave us some feedback so other people can find us. You can become a patron of the show at patreon.com. Also, check out our sponsors on our website, theuavdigest.com. And last but not least, you can buy some swag. Christmas is coming and you want some UAV Digest stuff, hint, hint, hint. And you can do that on our Cafe Press store. Of course, all of those are at theuavdigest.com. So I guess with that, I'll say this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.